Now, even though this slideshow has both the scientific method and the metric system in it, notice that the syllabus says all we're doing today is the scientific method. We'll do the metric system next time, which I guess will be a week from today since we don't meet on Monday. That means that we only have two slides to get through before we do the laboratory part. I think two slides. Yeah. So on this first slide, the scientific method is displayed as including these things in this list. The scientific method is basically the steps that people take to do real science. And so even though it's, you know, there aren't people standing around with clipboards with this checklist making sure they do them perfectly in this order, the scientific method does include these basic things. Observations are simply things that we notice about the world. We're making observations all the time. Often they're visual observations because we are highly visual animals. But that's not the only way we notice things about the world. You know, just smelling something is also an observation. So anything that we actually notice about the world is classified as an observation. And this, you know, without observations, there wouldn't be science, because without observations, we wouldn't wonder why things are the way they are. Okay, so we notice things, and then that leads to questions. We're not only observant, we're inquisitive by nature. Humans are. So we don't say, well, that's just the way things are, I don't care why. We wonder why. At least many of us do. And so the observations naturally lead to questions. The questions are, why are things the way that I notice them to be? Okay? Haven't really done any science yet. Even non-scientists question the way things are. But these questions naturally lead to hypotheses. Now these next two, hypotheses and predictions, are the trickiest part of this, because even science majors very often confuse these two. So I'm going to try to get you not to confuse these two. A hypothesis is an explanation. All right? And it's an explanation that is given in such a way that you're assuming it is true. So there's no question about it. Even though a hypothesis can be totally false, still, it's an explanation, and therefore it pretends that it's true. And in language, it's a declarative statement. There's no iffiness about it. It says, this is the reason that things are the way they are. It's an explanation, even though it might be totally wrong. And so really, in terms of structuring it as a sentence, a hypothesis would have the basic form, observation because explanation. Okay? So for instance, if I observe, which I have already done, that the sky is blue, you know, that's an observation. If I wonder why it is blue, I can come up with any number of explanations. For instance, one possible hypothesis is the sky is blue because tiny droplets of blue paint rain down from the moon. Right? That's an explanation. It explains that observation. Now that one happens to be false, if you didn't already know that. But the point is, a hypothesis is delivered as though it is true, and it explains the observation. So, as far as sentence syntax is concerned, the important word there, telling you that was a hypothesis, is because. Right? The stuff that follows because is a reason for, or an explanation. Therefore, it qualifies as a hypothesis. On the other hand, a prediction is related, and this is why students confuse these all the time, but a prediction is just what you think a prediction is in everyday life. it says something that will happen under certain circumstances, right? Predictions follow naturally from hypotheses. The point here is that you come up with a hypothesis, you don't know whether it's true or not, but if you assume that it is a true hypothesis, you would expect certain stuff to happen based on that hypothesis being true. That stuff that you would expect to happen is the predictions. Okay? So, for instance, in my example hypothesis, I guess a prediction would be, if I get rid of the moon, the sky will no longer be blue. Okay? And notice the big operative word there is will. Predictions often include the word will, or would, or something about the future.
Is it like a guess?
Well, hypothesis is often just defined in introductory textbooks as an educated guess. But it's still an explanation. You just don't know whether the explanation is right. The prediction is something that would come true if that hypothesis actually were true. Okay? And so the prediction itself is going to tell you what would happen or what will happen. And therefore, it's often put down in sentence form as an if-then statement. Right? If the hypothesis is true, then such and such will happen. That's a prediction. You see the difference? Are you going to remember the difference come test time? Okay. Well, predictions then, which spring naturally from hypotheses, predictions lead naturally into ways of testing those predictions. And that's where the real science is done. Up to this point, it's basically a mental exercise. But science actually is just a system, a formalized way of testing hypotheses by seeing whether the predictions that correspond to hypotheses actually come true when you test them. That's what science is. It's the testing of hypotheses to see whether predictions come true or not. And so whatever the prediction is kind of hints at a way to actually test it. For instance, if the prediction is if you get rid of the moon, the sky won't be blue anymore, all you have to do is get rid of the moon. That would be the actual experiment. Of course, that's not easy, but more realistic predictions and hypotheses have tests that you can actually perform. That's what science is, performing those actual tests. And therefore, when you do those tests, either the prediction comes true or not. And here's another important thing that people get wrong. When it comes to outcomes, there's two classes of outcomes. The prediction is true, it comes true, or the prediction does not come true. Or prediction happens or it doesn't. What does it say if the prediction happens?
Did that one time you got it right? Did that one time something happened? Don't you need to repeat it?
Yeah, repetition is an important part of science, definitely. But if a prediction does actually come true, that does not necessarily mean that the hypothesis is true. Okay? And that's because science is not able ever to absolutely prove anything. On the other hand, if the prediction does not come true, then that does say that the hypothesis is wrong, assuming you didn't make any mistake in the test. So science is able to prove things wrong. It's not absolutely able to prove things right. And therefore, the things that we call truth, facts, really are only the set of things that we haven't been able to disprove. And sometimes stuff that we've been saying is true for a long time if tested a different way, turns out to not actually be true. And that's where, remember I talked about the difference between science and religion, that's where they differ. If science finds that something is wrong, it scraps what it's been saying about that throughout history and says, okay, this is now the truth. So scientific truth evolves as we test things further and further and learn more and more. Okay? And a good example of this, for instance, is Newtonian physics, which is how things operate in the universe in a large scale, which was figured out a long time ago by several people, including Newton, which is why it's named Newtonian. He figured out a lot of stuff that still is a very good description of how the world is on a macroscopic scale. But actually, when they started looking at things that at a tiny, tiny scale, at the atomic scale, they realized that these laws we've been following did not apply. And so we had to come up with quantum mechanics, which is the new truth. Now, quantum mechanics actually is true in all cases, microscopic and macroscopic. It's just that the error that you get using Newtonian physics is negligible in the macroscopic world, so it doesn't matter whether you use quantum mechanics or classical mechanics. You get the same answer. But at a microscopic scale, it does matter. So we didn't know that for hundreds of years until we learned more, and we didn't just keep saying, yeah, classical mechanics is the truth. We said, no, this is the new truth. That's the way science works. All right, let's just use an example in slide 2 to make this even more clear. This is a really simple example for good reason, so that you really understand it well. This woman is observing the fact that her flashlight doesn't work. So that's the observation. That leads to the question, why is this flashlight not working? And so there can be any number of explanations, but just two are shown here. Remember, the explanations are the hypotheses. First hypothesis is the flashlight doesn't work, observation, because the battery's dead. Explanation. The other one is the flashlight doesn't work because the bulbs burn out. And there, like I said, there could be any number of other hypotheses. But each hypothesis naturally leads to its own prediction. If the first hypothesis is true, and in making a prediction you assume that it's true, then if you replace the battery, the flashlight will work. That's the prediction. For the other one, if you replace the bulb, the flashlight will work again. And so the test is actually doing that stuff that you have to do for the prediction, right? The first test is to replace the battery. Second test, a different experiment, testing a different hypothesis, is to replace the bulb. But notice that if you replace the battery and it works all of a sudden, that's the prediction coming true. All that tells you is that that hypothesis might have been true, might be true. Because it could be that there is a loose wire, for instance, and when you replace the battery, you jiggle it in just the right way to restore electrical continuity, and it'll work again, but not for the reason that the battery was dead, just for some other unrelated reason. In other words, you just got lucky. So you can't say with absolute certainty that that hypothesis was true, but the fact that the prediction did happen means that it could be true. And that's why you want to go back and test it again, not only yourself, you know, in a real example, in an important scientific hypothesis. You test it over and over, you do things multiple times, and other people throughout the world test it as well. If we keep testing things over and over, and they're always coming true as far as the predictions are concerned, then we stop calling those things hypotheses, and we start calling them theories, which are stronger, and eventually facts. Right? Until we learn differently. But if replacing the battery and you know the new battery is good does not solve the problem, then that tells you that hypothesis is not true. The problem was not that the battery was dead. And similarly for the bulb one. Okay? That's the essence of science. Now, one thing that's not on these slides, but that I do want to cover quickly, are variables, scientific variables. Variables, just in everyday language, are anything that can vary, right? Things that aren't are unchanging. And so there's all kinds of variables in the universe. But when you are conducting a scientific experiment, the test part, you would like to design well so that all of these unrelated variables that have nothing to do with your question don't come into play and affect your results. So most of these variables, even though they can vary, you as a scientist try to keep them from varying in your test because they have nothing to do with the experiment. And therefore, those are called controlled variables. You try to keep them from varying. Now, if I have a, for instance, let me just use a simple botany experiment as an example. If my hypothesis is that increasing the, or if my prediction, if my hypothesis is plants growth of plants, the rate of growth of plants is determined by the concentration of the fertilizer you give them, then my prediction is the greater the amount of fertilizer I give plants, the greater their rate of growth will be. Okay? So to test that prediction and therefore test the hypothesis, I set up several plants so I can do it more than just once. And there's going to be all kinds of variables that aren't related to that experiment, like the temperature, the amount of water I give them, the type of plant I use, time of day, all kinds of stuff. I want to keep all of those things the same so that they don't vary. So I use the same kind of pot in every plant in every pot. I use the same kind of pot. I use the same kind of soil, same temperature, same amount of sunlight, all that. Okay? Those are all controlled variables. There's two other types of variables, though, that are actually part of the experiment. And those are independent variable and dependent variable. Now, the independent variable, as the name implies, doesn't depend on something else other than the experimenter himself or herself. Practically speaking, in a scientific experiment, the independent variable is the thing that you as the experimenter adjust. Okay? You test things at different levels of the independent variable. So in my example, what would be the independent variable? What would be the thing that I change for each of the different pots? The concentration of the fertilizer, exactly. That would be the independent variable. The dependent variable is named that because it might depend on the independent variable. But practically speaking, in a scientific experiment, the dependent variable is the thing that you actually measure. You measure that in response to how whatever the level of the independent variable is. So in my example, what is the dependent variable? The growth rate of the plants, how many millimeters per week it grows, or however I want to express the growth. Right? I actually measure that. Every week I take a ruler and I measure how much it has grown in that amount of time. That's the growth rate. So, those are the three major kinds of variables, but notice that controlled variables are really not part of the experiment. You try to eliminate those, the effect of those. These are the two important ones that if you're going to graph your results, which scientific results are often graphed, then a properly prepared scientific graph, which has a vertical axis or y-axis and a horizontal axis or x-axis, always graphs things, these two remaining variables, the same way. Which one of these goes on the horizontal axis? The independent variable, yes. That's the thing that you adjust. The thing that you measure, the dependent variable, should go on the y. And so for however many values of independent variable you have, you'll have some value of dependent variable, and your data will look like little dots, which can have any shape depending on what the experiment is. Now, if these are my actual data, then it looks like if I were to fit a line to these, meaning put a line so that it gets as close to as many of the points as possible, it looks like there is not much of an effect there, right? In other words, even though I'm increasing the amount of fertilizer, the growth rate of the plants is not increasing. So in this case, even though this is called the dependent variable, this variable really does not depend on this other variable. And therefore, my prediction would be not come true, and therefore my hypothesis would be disconfirmed or proven false. But if my raw data look like this, then it says, yes, there is an effect. Growth rate does depend on amount of fertilizer, although it might hit a maximum, and it might actually start hurting the plants, so you can't assume that it continues in a linear fashion. Anyway, always, if you're making a plot, if you're making a graph, always plot dependent versus independent. When we use the word versus, it always means y versus x. Don't switch the axes if you do a graph. All right, any questions? That's today's lecture.